And Dr. Lauren Thibodeau, who we are talking with. And, you know, as I'm listening to Patsy Cline in the background and Crazy, I think of natural born soulmates and how many people who have gone temporarily insane over their point of ardor. You know, what's really interesting about some people is they will go through a period of time, maybe years, and I'm not talking about the junior high school crush, where the object of their affection can do no wrong, is perfect, is wonderful, is you put any adjective you want in there. And then one day something happens. You know, it was like, I don't know, some type of dose of logic hit over the head where suddenly you see the person differently. And you say, what was I thinking? Well, and so we'll get into what were you thinking? And is it a soulmate? And what's a soulmate as far as that goes? And when you feel that feeling, that first feeling where it takes your breath away when you meet somebody, and everybody's had those. The real question is, does that mean run to or run from? That and a number of other questions that you've brought up on Fast Blast, which are just fascinating. But if you go to drlauren.com, you can read all about natural born soulmates, and there is a link at raleigh.net. And we'll continue with Dr. Lauren right here on Coast to Coast AM. Raleigh James talking with Dr. Lauren about a number of things, and, you know, and largely if I had to pick one topic to cover them all, it is intuition, and of course the first book, Natural Born Intuition. But when we get on the subject of soulmates, it's fascinating, and I got to tell you, I knew you'd done comedy when I looked at the cover of your book, and it's two people walking hand in hand in paradise, and I go to the inside of your book, and you say, yeah, that's the cover, and that none of that's true.
Well, it's not exactly that way, but yes, there's this romanticized notion that you were describing before. That's what I mean by the soulmate myth, yeah. And that's where the disconnect comes in, isn't it? That it's supposed to be like that, but it isn't, is it?
Well, you know, I don't know. I never really thought it was supposed to be like that. Maybe I'm a realist. I look at people and say, ask yourself if this is somebody you could be successfully divorced from. And if you can't answer yes, well, God's sakes, don't marry them. But in terms of people who get caught up in this, and we've all known them, it's, everything is Bob or everything is Sherry, and it's just wonderful, and this is what I want, and I can't live without it. And what's fascinating in the cases where they wake up and they suddenly say, I don't know what I saw in them.
Mm.
What's that about?
Essentially, they've outgrown that person. I kind of divide soulmates into categories, and one is called the karmic connection. And those are the ones you want to run from much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the attraction is overwhelming and so strong that you feel like this had to happen, it was meant to be, all those romanticized ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That's karma. That's back from, blast from the past back at you to try and sort it out, maybe get it right this time. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to be together forever. Sometimes you finish your business, you wake up and go, what was I thinking? And you move on. What you were thinking is, when this is over, it's time to go. Learn a new lesson in a new relationship.
Well, that's interesting, because when you do have that literal gasp, that stop dead when you look at the person and that connectiveness is there, and you're right, it's instant karma. It truly is. You may not phrase it that way, but there's a connection that's undeniable.
It's
now,
true.
For and like you say, might be better to run from. But let's say you decide, nope, not this week, I'm running from them. Is that karma going to have to be dealt with at some point in time?
It is. At some point, it's kind of unavoidable, and I think that you could learn that lesson in a lot of other ways, perhaps, but to really, really get it, that person and you are going to have to sort it out somewhere, somehow. So even though the initial attraction is so overwhelming, some of us go, uh-oh, this is overwhelming, I better start running. We sit down and think to ourselves, okay, well, it's an hour later, I may as well take my lesson now.
Now, I would assume that individuals who are involved in relationships are also creating karma with each relationship.
Absolutely. But there, of course, there's dharma, too. You know, the good works we bring into a relationship also have that sort of same kind of payback potential, only to the positive side of the ledger.
Do you have to pay it back to the person it is owed?
No. Just like, we used to have a barter system how many millions of years ago, thousands of years ago. Now we use money. And even these days, we use a debit card. everywhere we go. So the money moves around and we get our debts paid and we get the things purchased that we need to, but we don't actually have to go direct to the source for it. It is broadened in a way where we can, it cycles around, if that makes sense.
No, it does, because what I'm thinking about is relationships where someone has done something fairly heinous to a mate, and that mate has basically been above board. They're thinking to themselves, I don't want karma with this person again. I don't want to come back with them. I'd rather date a mule. You know?
Right. And when it is something like that, where there's trauma of some sort, abuse of some sort, those are issues that often do have roots in previous experiences together. And so when you wake up to the awareness that you can step away, that this person is not going to change their ways no matter how much you love him or her, for example, those are the moments when you get the sort of light bulb, the karmic light bulb goes on and you can step away. It's all been illuminated and all the darkness is now cleared and you can move on to something else.
Now, you also see people who will have patterns, and they'll repeat them, like the gal who always says she didn't know he was a drunk, but my God, it's her fifth alcoholic husband, or the cheater, or whatever, you know, the abuser in the worst sense of it, or whatever it is. You see the patterns. Now, I would assume that the people that they're involved with are the facilitators for some lesson rather than the interpersonal interaction.
You're exactly right, that the karma is about the person experiencing it, not necessarily the person who's appearing to create it. It's a lesson.
Now, you've got a PhD in counseling,
yes,
as well as an MBA. So you see this also from the psychological and logical standpoint, as well as the spiritual and ethereal standpoint. You run into a lot of people who will find people who are good for them and care about them and would be the perfect person, but they're never attracted to that. They're always for the lure of romantic love.
Yes.
What's that about?
I think that's about people being afraid to essentially be that vulnerable, that this is so powerful, potentially. I don't think I'm worthy. I'm not going to go there. So I'll deflect that by pretending that, oh, I don't like blondes, or, gee, he's not tall enough, or whatever.
Now, things like that, in their next life, how would that karmically root?
I think in a future experience, it's going to show up again as people who keep coming to you with all the qualities you say you want, but maybe not that 100% overwhelming chemistry. And you're going to have to decide, is it about the physicality or is it about the soul level connection? If it's truly about a soulmate, what I'm calling a heartmate when it gets into romantic areas, if that's really what you want, you might have to sort of set aside your preconceived notion.
Now, interestingly, the other I've seen happen too, where individuals who are not willing to be hurt get into relationships where they won't have those feelings, but their partner, on the other hand, is 100% gung-ho. And every time I've seen that, I'm thinking to myself, ooh, this is karma in the making.
I think you're right. When you witness that much of a mismatch, yeah, one person's obviously there to learn and one's there to teach. And it's, we always learn and we always teach in relationships. But sometimes a big gap like that is so obvious, except for the person who's living it.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And you wonder, since both of those people are obviously playing the roles and staying there, whether or not that's karma being created or karma being worked out. How can you tell the difference?
Well, that's a great question. It is really hard to sort it out sometimes. I think the only way to know that one is to really kind of sit with yourself and, again, get out that ledger book. I am logical, can you tell? Right, and just sit down and kind of line it out and start going, all right, what's the part where I feel like I'm here to teach and what's the part where I'm here to learn? Whichever list is longer helps you sort out what it is in the relationship that your role is. And then you can note that if you're the one who's learning, you've got more opportunity to create karma, because learners make more mistakes, hopefully, I shouldn't say hopefully, than the teachers do.
Right.
So the teacher's coming at it with a little more balance, a little more awareness.
Now, for individuals who are the learners, so to speak, obviously the hope is that in the next life they'll go on in their studies. But how often does somebody who has patterns rooted here go through, say, two-thirds of their life and then have the epiphany?
Two-thirds of their life and have the epiphany where, oh, okay, where they suddenly wake up to the point of, oh, duh,
yeah.
I need to teach this lesson rather than learn it.
Yeah, or now I see what I have created. And, you know, you've got to be at a horrible level of pain to get there. No. But nonetheless, you will have people who will awaken. You know, maybe they're now in the final decades or decade of their life, and they say, hey, I've seen exactly what this pattern was. Where do I go from here?
Actually, in a case like that, Raleigh, I think that those are things that we get to the other side and we sort it out with wiser beings, spirit guides, whatever you want to think of them as.
Okay.
We don't do anything alone, thankfully. We always have help and support. So we'll get on the other side. I shouldn't make a joke and call it a post-mortem, but it will be. You'll be over on the other side looking back at it going, ooh, wow, yikes. I could have done that a little differently, probably a lot more neatly and cleanly. Doesn't matter, though, because I learned. Lesson done.
Right. But some people, I think, as I say, they see it while they're still here. They get to a point in life where they look back and they, you know, they might not say, gee, I've been a real toad, but they may, in fact, say, I see where I'm the cause of my destiny.
Now,
many
people.
I think
that's when they turn to the Dharma side of the cycle, don't they? They go from karma and creating a mess to Dharma and healing it.
Yeah. And, of course, seeing it and being able to live it are two entirely different things.
Correct. It's true. And that's where we all need psychotherapists from time to time, I guess. We need someone to help us walk through it so that we, you know, avoid the biggest pitfalls.
Which are often, I would think, our own patterns.
And exactly. And we might see them, but it's like all the people who say, oh, you know, I'm addicted to coffee or whatever it is. I just can't seem to, you know, get over that. And maybe you have to just come to a day and say to yourself, well, that's okay, isn't it?
Now, I've been building up to something, actually, and that is mediums themselves. And you've known a lot of them, and I haven't known nearly as much. But one of the things I've noticed is that many of them are so spiritual on the surface, but when you get to know them, I won't say they're petty, but I will say they're anything what you would think of as evolved. What's up with this?
Well, I have to agree that not everybody in any field is the shining example of the best way to do things, I suppose. And we are humans, you know, even if we are out there trying our best to help people sort out their lives, we still have places where maybe we haven't gotten 100% together. You can tell it's hard for me to even go there, that yes, within this work, there are a lot of people who are rather petty and competitive, and it's not their highest and best expression, is it?
Well, what's frightening to me is that the ones who are good at it and are still on that level, they know it. In other words, there's the knowing and the knowing, the capital K and not,
right.
Where on the one level, it's like intellectually and maybe spiritually they get it, whereas emotionally, maybe it's that EQ, you know, they owe points.
Right. It's true, where they still have big blind spots in their own lives about how to deal with people. I call it spiritual bypass sometimes, where a person skips right over the healing process.
Right, like, never mind, that doesn't apply to me.
Right, exactly. Or I've got so much horrible trauma in my life, I'm suddenly going to, instead of dealing with it, I'm going to allow it to become spiritual enlightenment through pain and trauma. Okay, that's very nice. That is often a launch pad, no question. But you still have to feel it to heal it, as the saying goes.
There are things on this planet that maybe from a moral standpoint we take as absolutes. And one of them, when it comes to, say, cheating, stealing this guy or gal or whatever, we would say, well, you know, that's absolutely verboten. At least I hope we would, and not if you read the tabloids, though. But the question where I am with this is, very often people will be at a point in their life where they've, you know, probably need to make a change or should make a change, and it's not until something comes into their life that forces the change. And often when it's that affair, that's not where they wind up ultimately, but it's the thing that got them off the dime, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So while we're on a moral level, hopefully all agreeing that this is unacceptable, on a spiritual level, something tells me that it's not black and white.
No, it's energetically kind of messy at the edges, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how do we ever, is it something that ever gets neat and tidy and everyone does it in what we would hope would be the highest moral way? Unfortunately, they don't. But you do see people who work toward that. And I guess we have to honor ourselves for working toward it, that they are trying to put off the affair until after the kids are out of school or whatever it is. People are avoiding starting a new romance until at least they're legally separated, if not yet divorced, and things like that. Yeah, I see a lot of this in my work. People who are moving on to the next phase before having neatly tied up the last one.
Oh, well, sure. Now, the other side of that is when you mentioned the kids, I had to laugh because I worked with somebody years ago, and he was just one of these long-suffering types in this ridiculous marriage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not my place to comment to him, but I remember he was always saying, well, when the kids are grown, and of course the kids grew up, and when the kids are out of college. And, you know, I remember the last time I saw him, I said, huh, waiting for the kids to die? And,
yeah.
You know, so I wonder how much of that in those kind of situations are also the traps that allow you the luxury of being miserable.
True enough. And you get points for misery in some people's way of looking at it, right? Because, oh, yeah. Woe is me. And it gives me something that makes me feel alive and impassioned, even if it's kind of a negative form of passion,
sure.
A sad kind of passion.
Sure.
It's still something that makes a person feel that there's more to life than the day-to-day drudgery.
Yeah.
So the rest of us who figure it out and shoot for the joyfulness and find the delights in life, I think we're the ones who, maybe we did enough of that in past life, enough drudgery, enough sadness.
I don't know. I always say if you don't like work and you don't like home, you better love the drive in between.
There you go. It's you got to find the joy somewhere.
Right.
And there are days when the most joyful you can get is, well, I woke up breathing. That's a good start.
Right, right. In all seriousness, now you're getting into Maslow's hierarchy of needs, of course,
yep.
Because if you can't breathe, nothing else matters. And then
that's
if
right.
You can't sleep and you can't have water, and on the list goes. What's funny, Lauren, and I never even really thought about it on this level, but after you get through the basics, that's where people's priorities very much are unknown to them.
Oh, that's very insightful. Yes, Raleigh, I have to agree. And that's where the messiness starts, isn't it? They think, oh, well, okay, it's another person will bring me that happiness I'm looking for. That Jerry Maguire, you complete me business makes you want to scream. No, 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 no. Your job is complete yourself.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, because you can't find anything that's outside of you, which goes back to intuition, which is the start of all of this. But on the
inner teacher, intuition, yes. Mm-hmm.
So when did you first realize that you occasionally were talking to people that most of us can't reach? I should rephrase that and say a lot of us have talked to them, but when did you realize you were getting answers?
I was a child. I was maybe 2, 3, 4. From the time I can recall, the other side, as it's now called so euphemistically, really was real to me. There was no other. It was all around me all the time. So I kind of came into this world aware of it. Sensitive to it. And I think, boy, I'd love to get some research grants. Anybody out there want to throw some money toward this? I'm happy to take it and think of a great study, because I know we're going to discover there's a lot more to this physiologically than we expect. Mm-hmm. There is a hypersensitivity you see in many, many, many mediums. We're allergic to everything, you know, light, sound, you know, you name it. We're hypersensitive.
It's interesting because there's theories, of course, that everybody has this at birth, but then society, in fact, talks them out of it, if you will. But
true.
That
we do sort of go underground.
Yeah, but that thought that there's a physiological connection is it would be a great study. Now
we know that I think left-handedness or ambidextrous,
right.
All of that has to do with the way the hemispheres of the brain interact.
Sure.
I know there's something to that. That's why women, I think, are known to be more intuitive, generally speaking. We have more fibers connecting both sides right. of the brain, which is why we're much more circular in our reasoning.
You betcha, and more verbal, too, of course. We have Dr. Lauren with us, and we'll find out, well, if you've been hearing it since you were 2, can you turn it off? And yes, and how does that work? And we'll also get to some poignant questions on Fast Blast, for sure, the side of it that maybe isn't also joyful in individuals' lives. And then next hour, we'll have your calls as we continue to talk to Dr. Lauren with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking with Dr. Lauren, and next hour we will take your calls. But we got an email from Nancy, actually a fast blast, about what about suicide to cut short a painful, apparently meaningless, prolonged life. And she mentioned some of her physical challenges and had gotten to that point. And, you know, that's a situation where you don't always have to be physically compromised. That power of purpose, when you get to a point where you just have that pervasive, there's no purpose, there's no reason, there's no sense of going on. You know, somebody else might say, well, I'm sure there's a little pill advertised on late night TV for you that somebody makes. But the reality is the bigger pill to swallow is finding the spiritual challenges and the karmic challenges. And we'll get back to Dr. Lauren, because one thing that she said that surprised me a little is there are accidents. So if you find yourself a victim of your own body, is that possibly one of life's accidents or something of that magnitude? Always a karmic test. We've also had a number of people who, anytime you'll deal with these kind of topics, will say, this is all BS. You know, I can't see it, I can't touch it, it's not real. And, there's many ways to combat those naysayers. The reality is, of course, if you're a believer, no explanation necessary. And if you're not, no explanation is possible. So this gets back to what we were saying with regard to natural-born soulmates and natural-born intuition, is it's all about resonance. So if you're resonating, that's great. Otherwise, hopefully we're entertaining you right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM, and we're talking with Dr. Lauren, drlauren.com, about the dearly and not so dearly departed, as well as the process of contacting them, and the real nuts and bolts of the here and now as well. But I was last asking you about realizing that you were talking to folks the rest of us don't see, and that begs the question, can you turn those conversations on and off?
I think you absolutely have to. Yes, you can, to answer the question, and absolutely you should, because it's unhealthy otherwise, I think, to be that open and aware all the time. It has physiological effects on a person.
Oh, sure it would. But, you know, let's say you're standing in the supermarket line and you're half daydreaming. Every now and then, does somebody come over and say, hey, could you tell a woman in the green sweater such and such?
It doesn't happen to me anymore, but that's because I've learned to sort of tell them the rules. The rules are come to me, when I'm open for business, so to say. No, this isn't my time, not yours.
Okay.
It's boundary setting, almost in the same way that you would learn to do that with any family member, work relationship, friendship. You only call me between 7 and 9 p.m., not 7 a.m., things like that. It's very much a similar process.
How do you physically do that? You know, I understand what you're saying, but for the rest of us, if somebody continues to talk, it's hard not to listen. What part of your body is able to not hear it?
I guess it becomes sort of a discipline. I just do not answer the call. I've learned to shut off that sensor.
You know, I would think for people developing this skill, that would be harder than actually turning it on.
I think you're right about that. Having it switched on is something that happens in a number of ways. And meditation, of course, is one of the absolute best ways to learn to be perceptive and sensitive to things. So when people are taking on practices like that, they often find their psychic sensitivity, their intuitive awareness increases. And along with that, with some people, mediumistic abilities as well. So people who are taking those kinds of inward journeys should also definitely take the time to kind of shield themselves. I never say protect, because I don't think we have anything to fear. It's more declaring yourself off limits for certain experiences.
Now, we were talking about intuition and psychic phenomena and developing that, and of course not second guessing it and things of this nature, but how do you know, for instance, when you're getting suddenly a stream of information, that it's actually valid and just not your general thoughts playing tricks on you?
General thoughts, of course, thinking takes some energy. You have to sit down and mull it over, ponder it, think it through. You know, all those terms we use, where intuition comes in such a flash of awareness that there's no prep, there's no obvious I sat and thought it through, but the information just kind of hits you. Like, boom, this is the thing. I say then, of course, sit down and think it over. Don't just trust your intuition without also checking with your logical mind and taking a good close look at it.
Right, because on the one hand, you'd think, well, I'm going to use psychic abilities or intuition to help me make wiser decisions. On the other hand, you say to yourself, I might be going down the path of no return here. How do I know?
Well, impulsive, you know, wise versus impulsive. Yeah, this mm-hmm. is a way of gathering another level of insight about an issue. It's not the best way necessarily or the only way ever.
Now,
it's an important thing to do. An adjunct to the rest of your decision-making.
Creative people will often say, like writers, you know, I sit down to write and I don't know what happens. I just start typing. It just kind of comes out of me. And later I look at it and I said, damn, I wrote that.
That's it. No thinking required. That was inspiring, wasn't it?
Right. And, you know, that is a commonality among every writer I've ever talked to. That, not all of it, of course, but when they get in the groove, as it were, they will just go forth and have no idea from whence this is coming. Where is it coming from?
The connection between that individual, the writer, the musician, the artist, and what I'm going to call that transpersonal divine, that larger than us aspect, that the source that we all can mm-hmm. tap into.
Okay.
We can live in our little isolated bubbles, or we can open ourselves to the big ocean. And these are the folks who, whether they know they're doing it or not, they've tapped the ocean.
Right. And I don't think it's necessarily in any knowing. It's you get to a point, just like when you're driving along and have a form of hypnosis. You know, you didn't realize that you weren't, you know, went through Bowling Green. Suddenly you're in Nashville. That's sort of like, where was I for that part of this trip?
Yeah. And we do shift and move our consciousness around through the day, absolutely, and different states and levels of awareness. Most of us live in if you put it on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say that 10 could be deep trance, mediumship in the sort of Edgar Cayce tradition,
mm-hmm.
and 1, 2, and 3 would be, you know, waking consciousness. So psychics and mediums are probably operating between 4 and 7 most of the time.
It's actually a happier place to be because it's more in the now.
Yes, it really is much simpler when you get the hang of it. And the hardest part is, as you said before, Raleigh, trusting yourself and not second-guessing.
Right.
And not editing the information and not over-interpreting it either.
Right, you have to realize you've become a problem thinker. Yeah.
Yes. And it's almost as if being too aware gets in your way. So when I'm writing, for example, I stay away from reading anything that's even closely related. It's better I don't. I don't want to be influenced.
Sure, sure. Now, as I say, a lot of, on the fast blast, several of them dealing with suicide. And I know that for many people, either contemplating it or having been affected by it with someone in their life, this is a very emotional issue. But the one email from Nancy where she was talking about an apparently meaningless prolonged life due to physical problems more than anything else, is something where you are so physically compromised. Can that be accidental or is that karmic?
I would say that in general it's probably a karmic situation, but yes, it can be an accident. For example, a literal accident. A day you decided to drive back home and someone came out of nowhere and hit you, when mm-hmm. if you just remember to take that file to the office with you, you never would have needed to go back home.
Wow. This more than anything else we've talked about is blowing my mind, because most of the time I kind of have a preconceived notion about things and where they might go. And I had always believed that anything that so life-changing had to be part of the pattern. And, of course, the reason, in part, that you want to hang on to that is we don't like to think that life can be accidental.
There are random events.
Yeah.
It's not random. And, yeah, we're back to the whole, as you called it before, popular physics, the whole,
right,
you know, quantum physics, light, that there are particles that go flying around in response to other ones,
right,
that only move a certain way when not watched. And so you could say that these events are the not watched.
Now, for somebody who's in that compromised position, and in Nancy's case is saying, after 45 years of seeking and learning, I'm now unable to help others. And I think, you know, I'm not going to have a discussion, Nancy, of whether it's time to go for you. But for individuals in that situation, is suicide ever karmically an appropriate action?
I believe there are times when, yes, the decision to transform from this world is a choice. There are times when that is a reasoned, thoughtful, considered, long considered decision that people make. It's impulsivity, I think, is the telling part of it. That comes more from, you know, an immediate in the moment, I have to end it all now, I can't take it anymore. That may be someone who could benefit by learning other ways of coping, and someone like Nancy who has spent decades trying to sort out how can I manage this and probably gone through every other solution. I'm not suggesting that this isn't something she should do, and certainly, you know, it's, again, free will is the thing that drives it. Is there judgment on the other side about this? I really don't believe so at all. I think what we come to is, what did we learn? Did we learn that we should have stuck it out? Did we learn that leaving early was the better choice?
I would also assume that the judgment, be it self or others, would have to do with the impact of the action on those close to you, too.
That's a huge part of it, I think, is that, you know, again, keeping in mind that we are never isolated, that we are part of a large tapestry, and if we pull a thread out of the place it's supposed to be, so to speak, it alters the pattern, doesn't it?
Now, that gets down to supposed to, of course. And
right,
so
the word I should immediately
That said, my question was, is there a slate for the most part where we talked about what was preordained, you were born and you die. Is our death pretty much preordained, or do we have death opportunities, if you will, there's a way to put it, several times throughout our life? In other words, how you know, stuck is that?
I think we have several. I mean, I myself have managed to accidentally almost nearly electrocuted to death, and another time I had a big bleeding issue, hemorrhaging.
Geez.
Yeah, and I thought at the time, I'm back again. But, you know, it's I'm not saying that everyone has to go through near-death experiences of that sort of nature, but I do believe we all have close calls. Oh, yeah. Anybody who's ever sat through the light turns green and something tells them don't go yet, and they miss the accident because they trusted that gut instinct, that in the moment feeling of not quite yet, they missed one of those five or seven chances we all have.
So that gut instinct, back to that, in terms of spirit guides, if you will, are we all assigned a group of spirit guides?
We all have spirit guides, absolutely. Assigned, I'm not sure that I'd say it was assigned as much as because as you evolve and change and your resonance, that vibe you're sending out changes, you're going to attract different ones. In fact, doing mediumship work, even in front of groups, you notice very quickly, at least I do, the patterns of things. You'll start off with a resonance. You're talking to one person about a grandparent who played the violin, and before you know it, you've got seven other violinists in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that when you start sending out a particular vibe, it is brought into your life.
So they're more, I won't say spirit guide du jour, but they're more in terms of what you're resonating at that period in your life.
That's occupying your mind and your consciousness, yes. Huh. But we do have some, I think, that I believe that we sort of stay with us throughout the whole thing, like a personal spiritual coach, if you will. They're always there.
How do you meet them?
Yeah, ask, who's there? Who's helping me? Why are you here? What can I learn? How can we work together? Interview them like you might any other job applicant.
And I would also assume that it's easy to talk about this, but I assume this is a skill to be developed, like playing an instrument or anything else, that for someone like yourself, it was spontaneous, a gift, if you will. But for others who aren't so gifted, I assume it takes a lot of practice. Is it possible in everyone?
It's possible in everyone, and people like me who may be sort of jolted into it through near-death experience, through having been born with a more open kind of centers, that's still leaves us negotiating the gap. We have to sort it out, figure it out, tell it to go away. I used to see horrible things like the Challenger explosion, and I finally said, don't show me things I can't change. All it does is bother me, make me sad. And there is a certain ability, and Nancy may be one of those persons too. A lot of people who are highly compassionate often find that they're so connected to others that they actually literally almost feel their pain as well as their own. And sorting out what's yours and what belongs to the collective is really tough.
Yeah, I'd assume anyone who is a psychic is also to a degree an empath, and putting that boundary there is key to survival.
Yes, so we have to sort out, is this depression or this feeling of sadness, is it mine or is it me being spongy?
Right, and picking up on a thought around me, sure. Now, of all the things you've learned from those who are not incarnate, is there anything that was really surprising or revealing to you in a way that you wouldn't have expected it?
You know, there was something that I never, in all those years of training as a counselor, and I even worked with children and families, you know, in my training period and all that, and after for a while, I never once thought about this, but people on the other side who die suddenly really encourage us to not name young ones after them, because the person who's, it's an honor, yes, but the child grows up in fear often. Oh, you know, Uncle Joey died, he was 19, and that diving accident, I'll die too at 19, that sort of thing.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it really did kind of catch me off guard. I was like, oh, I never thought about that. But
yeah.
It makes such logical sense to me, even from a psychological standpoint, that children don't have the capacity to have a nuanced kind of thinking going on. And they don't see that it's an honor. They just know they're named after someone who died young and presume it'll happen to them.
And not only that, they're probably told, oh, you're named after Uncle Joey who was hit by a camel or whatever.
Right. And it becomes almost traumatizing for them. So that was something that kind of was like, oh, wow. Now, you know, naming a similar name, an initial, a middle name or something, then all that's fine. But, yeah, that kind of, it seems like a real practical thing.
Well,
that's one thing I've learned.
You know, that apart from anything necessarily spiritual or intuitive, I think we forget how impressionable children are, and very often parents will laugh off a child's fears or concerns, and that can be somebody who 30 years down the road is in your office for counseling.
True. I don't mean to make light of the need for counseling, but you're right. It's taking it lightly here, yes. Those things seem so small, and that the impact, the seeds they plant, can be huge.
Yeah, and I think that of all the things I see karmically, and maybe it's not karmic because most of the adults who are the biggest offenders aren't the abusers. They're, I want to call them the brain dead. They're just unaware that they are impregnating children with thoughts, fears, and complexes that are not going to go away.
It's true. And then the child learns what we all learn in the end, I guess, which is pretty much it's up to you individually to sort it out. You get help and support and love and balance partners, as I call them in my book on soulmates, people who are there to help you. But it's still your job in the end.
Yeah, that's very true. And as well as your job to find that sense of purpose when you hit those doldrums. And it seems somehow that people tend to have their greatest revelations at times like that. So we have had Dr. Lauren for the last couple of hours, and I've hogged her handily. That's for sure. I could ask questions for the next couple hours, but it's your turn coming up next. All of your questions next with Dr. Lauren right here on Coast to Coast AM.